So, ladies and gentlemen, I will speak about the Samaritan hermeneutics. The Samaritans had and have only one sacred writ, and that is the Torah, the five books of Moses. Due to this fact, the Samaritan history of biblical interpretation, along with its techniques, is restricted to this relative short corpus, comparing to the larger one of the Jews and Christians. In view of the brevity of the text and elaborated and nuanced traditions of interpretation and hermeneutics might be required. Instead, there is a relative small corpus of text which can be described as Samaritan scriptural interpretations. Scholarly interest was not too intensive concerning Samaritan hermeneutics as such. There are only five scholarly works on Samaritan hermeneutics. As you see, there is only one monograph and four articles. And actually, three of the articles are dealt with the Arabic period of the Samaritan hermeneutics. Actually, I argue for threefold division of the history of interpretation, which division assigns the main epoch of the linguistic segmentations of the Samaritans. The first epoch is connected to the use of the Hebrew language and the translation of the Samaritan Pentateuch to Aramaic. The second one is connected to the active usage of Aramaic until the 7th century. The third epoch is connected to the shift of Arabic as the everyday language of the Samaritan community. The most universal exegetical technique, or rather understanding, of the Samaritans is the sensus literaris, which doesn't require too much further interpretation. As general rule of Samaritan hermeneutics, it is formulated by Abraham Tal, I quote, "Samaritan exegesis considers the text of the Samaritan, the Pentateuch, to be a unity, every word of which is indispensable. No repetition is redundant and no expression is elliptic. Every word and every phrase has its raison d'etre. What is not explicitly said is necessarily implied." End of quote. This last idea, however, opens the way to a wide range of interpretations of the Samaritans, though not systematically collected and developed, as in the case of the Jewish Midrash literature. All the more so, they didn't write down any of their hermeneutical principles, which therefore could be called rather organic thinking or spontaneous approach. Lowy, the only one who wrote a monograph on the Samaritan hermeneutics, states that, I quote, "hermeneutical rules were not determined abstractly by the Samaritans in order to create traditions, but contrivance, a living tradition, or what they believe to be such, determined when, where, and how to employ these rules." End of quote. The whole mentality of Samaritan exegesis is based on the conviction that only Moses was able to understand the Torah in its complexity, through the guidance of the Creator God. Thus, exegetical texts frequently refer to him as the source of a given formulation. Of course, in reality, there were scribes, learned men, and priests, or the high priest, who were trained to read and interpret the Torah. So, about the first epoch, the formation of the Samaritan Pentateuch. The first epoch of the Samaritan scriptural interpretation is connected to the formation of the Samaritan Pentateuch. The last two decades resulted in a revolutionary twist in the understanding of the Samaritan Pentateuch in scholarly work. The re-evaluation of the reading variants of the different manuscripts and fragments of the Torah among the Dead Sea Scrolls explored that the reading of the Samaritan Pentateuch are not later sectarian changes in the Hebrew text, but results of scribal techniques used to make the copies of the 3rd to 1st century BCE. These texts were called pre-Samaritan text versions, referring to the fact that they contain special scribal techniques like confrontation, plain readings, and some other alterations. These variants represent sui generis, some types of interpretations of the previous text, as Alan D. Crone formulates, I quote, "It is clear enough today that a substantial number of Samaritan variants relate to Samaritan hermeneutics exegesis of the text, and theories as to the nature of the text. They are not only the crystallization into a particular text type of textual variants, such as one found in some of the Qumran pre-Masoretic texts, though there are many of these relating old Samaritan rituals. Some of the variants and rewording are intended to impart a more perfect and intentional consistent structure of the text. End of quote. So what could be determined as part of hermeneutics or exegetical issues of the Samaritan Pentateuch's variants? First of all, we have to recall the statement of Abraham Tal about the nature of the Samaritan approach to the biblical text. In their view, in the Samaritan's view, the text is understandable as it stands. But the text is not identical with the signs by which it is recorded, especially not in the case of the Hebrew, since the vocal system is only partially encoded into the written form. The reading of the consonant of writing depends on the spelling of the words, so the homographs. Another factor is the division of the text signed later by punctuation, like atnaxilu or the pizza signs in the Samaritan Pentateuch, which combines or separates given words or parts of the sentences. Further reading possibilities, which could alter also the written text later on, are the interchange of homophone consonants, for example, gutturals, and the interchange between graphically hardly distinguishable consonants like yod, vav, or dalet, resh. So the Samaritan reading tradition is itself presents a special interpretation of the text. The stability and uniformity of pronunciation amongst the Samaritans in the reading of the Torah, despite the diversity and multiformity of its orthography, indicate that the oral tradition was a relatively secure defense against innovations and changes in the understanding of the scripture. The destruction of the Yahwistic temple on Mount Gerizim by John Hyrcanus in about 110 BCE generated a theological concentration on the holy place, on the Gerizim. The fourth Schreibung of the 10th commandments, which could have been taken place before this period, provided an example to alter the interpretation of other texts referring to the sacred area in Shechem, and especially Mount Gerizim. There are three references probably originated in the contemporary Samaritan interpretation of the Torah. In a fragment of an unknown Hellenistic Jewish writer called Pseudo-Eupolemus, the story of Abraham is retold, and it reads at the end of the topic of Genesis 14, I quote, "He was also received as a guest by the city at the temple Argarizim." So Abraham was also received as a guest by the city at the temple Argarizim, which is interpreted as the mountain of the Most High. He also received gifts from Melchizedek, who was a priest of God and a king as well. End of quote. This is not a Torah text, of course, but a historical paraphrase of Abraham's story, which interprets the meeting of Abraham and Melchizedek happened on Mount Gerizim. The combination of city and temple on Mount Gerizim refers to the real knowledge of the author of the pre-Hyrcanus situation of Mount Gerizim, where a temple city existed, though some scholars, as Holiday, saw the city to be Shechem. Due to this portion of the text, Pseudo-Eupolemus is generally coined to be a Samaritan writer. Another, perhaps Samaritan, interpretation of the patriarchal stories is of the Shechem poem of Theodotus. It is written, form is in Eusebius' Preparatio Evangelica, but as a retelling of Alexander Polyhistor, so it went through several reworkings. The text doesn't give the name Gerizim for the Mount of Shechem. Instead, it calls the city of Shechem as a sacred city built on the mountain, based on the base of the mountain. The adverb sacred makes the text Sumerian, describing the sacred area, but without a reference to Gerizim, it is not really a Samaritan. The third reference to a Samaritan interpretation of the patriarchal narratives is preserved in the New Testament. In the speech of Stephen in Acts of the Apostles 7:16, the burial of Jacob described in Genesis 52:13 is given in the context of Genesis 33:19. Consequently, the cave of Machpelah, the burial place of the patriarch, is connected to the sacred area of Shechem. All these interpretations point to the direction of the Samaritan exegesis using intertextual parallels to highlight the sacral importance of their sole holy place, the Gerizim. The third source of Samaritan interpretation of the first period is the Aramaic translation of the Samaritan Pentateuch. The present manuscript of the Samaritan Targum are of the 11th century, but the earliest versions are approximately from the 1st century CE. As Samuel Kuhn, a Hungarian rabbi, argued that the Samaritan Targum is eine wörtliche, am Buchstaben klebende Übersetzung. But Abraham Tal discovered some alterations in words he called concealed midrash. Similar to Onkelos, there is also a tendency in the Samaritan Targum to change in the translation of the Hebrew anthropomorphic expressions concerning God and his deeds, as we heard in the case of the Septuagint in Professor Meyer's foretrack. Like Elohim is changed in Genesis 3:5 to angels, for example, so you will be like gods. Or in later manuscripts, due to the Arabic influence, Elohim is changed to Allah, which is very interesting. The Samaritan Targum gives more respect to the patriarchs, therefore it alters Genesis 31:19-20, the robe of the teraphim by Rachel, the mother of the righteous Joseph, who was the ancestor of the Samaritans. So the word ganav is changed to nasab, to take. Similarly, in the blessing of Jacob, doesn't curse his sons, Simon and Levi, but praises Ragzon in Aramaic, which is the changes of Arur and Adir in the Hebrew. So in this period, most of the hermeneutical activities were connected to the Torah itself. The second epoch is the so-called early hermeneutical works. The existence of the Targum of the Samaritan Pentateuch already signals the active usage of Aramaic language among the Samaritans. There is, however, an explicit Aramaic period in the writing of Samaritan literature, which reaches its zenith in the 3rd-4th century CE. It is a time of flourishing of the Samaritans in Palestine, as well as in the different diasporas from Egypt to Damascus and up to the Greek islands. Next to a political or rather religious leader of the community, the so-called Baba Rabba, there were theologians and poets producing texts which contained Torah exegesis. In the historical records of the Samaritans, the foundation of the Torah schools is imputed to Baba Rabba, where the major subject was interpretation. Three works or collections should be mentioned as those dealing with Torah interpretations: the Uri poetic works, the Tibbat Marke, and the Asatir. The liturgical corpus of about 60 poems of Amram Dare and his son Marke and grandson Nina are the first Samaritan writings expressing biblical interpretations in a special nature. Their poems are pure Aramaic composition of the 3rd-4th century CE. Of Amram Dare, there are no rhythms or even lengths of lines, but they are full of ornaments, elements, and high degree of rhetoric. Of Marcus have rhythms and consist of 4 or 7 line strophes. Most of them are in alphabetic order in the first lines. Concerning the content, they frequently use expressions and topics of the Torah. For example, a poem of Dare used the regular morning prayer, even today, is an interpretation of the creation of the light and the lightening heavenly bodies, expressing the beginning of the day. The second, the Tibbat Marke, is a special midrash to some consequent Torah passages, which are separate text portions following each other in a chronological order. This subsequence of the passages are the style of retelling the stories connect Tibbat Marke to the genre of rewritten Bible. Tibbat Marke consists of 6 books. Book 1 discusses the passage of the deliverance of Egypt in Exodus 3:14. Book 2 expands the Song of the Sea, Exodus 15. Book 3 concentrates on the curses of the Levites in Deuteronomy 27. Book 4 elaborates the Song of Moses in Deuteronomy 32. And Book 3 treats the story of the death of Moses. Book 6 has a discourse on creation and dialogue between Moses and the Hebrew letters. The text of Tibbat Marka is uneven in style. Poetic and narrative passages exchange each other, sometimes very suddenly and frequently. Repetitions and sequences are the favorite literary tools of the author. These repetitions couldn't consist of 3, 4, 5, 7, 10, and 12 elements, the symbolic numbers of the Bible. The repetitions are not only poetic tools, but in most of the cases, they're theological ideas, interpreting and widening the scope of the situation. Sometimes quotations of the Torah are elements of these repetitions and sequences, scriptura sui ipsis interpres, but most of the cases, they are utilized as the reasons or interpretations of using some words or other. Rising from the linguistic characteristics of the text, sometimes the repetitions are the successive questions of the same passages in Aramaic and in Hebrew. On the other hand, they are analogies or parallels, providing a much wider understanding and theological horizon of the basic Torah verse. Allegories and metaphors are also frequent in the Tibbat Marka. The Asatir, the surtex, is a comprised and in the same time rewritten version of the story of the Torah from the creation to the death of Moses, with an eschatological addition at the end. There are portions which are skipped, others are shortened, but others are given in more Agadic-like details. One of these is, for example, the life of Cain and Abel, giving a more understandable reason for Cain's murder, which seems to have more important results to the world and to the universe than the sin of Adam and Eve. The content of the book could represent an oral tradition of the Samaritans. The Aramaic language of the book is combined with Arabic forms and expressions, which signalizes the transition from Aramaic period to the Arabic one, and therefore provide a circa 10th, 11th century date for the final stage of the composition of the book. The third epoch is the later Hermeneutic works in Arabic. Real commentary literature of the Samaritans was produced after the Arabic conquest of Palestine and the whole region in 633 CE. Though the earliest writers and manuscripts are from the 11th century, when Aramaic was totally changed by the Arabic in spoken as well as in written language. Some of the texts have polemical tone against Muslim interpretations to avoid the attention of the Muslim censors. Some texts use Samaritan characters to write the word Quran. In spite of the several commentaries, there is no extant complete commentary of the Torah by one author, though more references made to the existence of complete commentaries. The Arabic works utilize several technical terms to introduce different types of interpretive information. They are listed and determined by Weigelt, one of the articles I show you, who's supposed to count not only the concrete commentaries, but also the halachic work into the rubric of exegetical literature. His argument is that, as in the case of most Jewish halachic texts, the reasoning of the writers, editors, is based on the interpretation of biblical verses. Indeed, this treatise deals with the theoretical and practical topics given in the Torah passages. There are actually 13 different extant Arabic commentaries, and we suppose some further existing commentaries. Unfortunately, no one of these commentaries are complete commentaries of the Torah, but it seems to be that they were such originally. These exegetical works are fully of legendary materials, but different to the Jewish rabbinical literatures, but sometimes there are also some similarities. So consequently, these Arabic commentaries were written in accordance to the exegetical traditions handed down from earlier oral traditions of the Samaritans. The only hermeneutical ruse we can find in Samaritan literature is to be found in one of the Arabic works, in the Kitab al-Halif, in a 20th century work. There is a list of six interpretational modes. Here is the quotation, and the six is the wording of the passage, the natural meaning, overall purpose, and what makes sense. Induction from other cases, and what are normal phenomena. These are comparable to some of the Jewish hermeneutical rules, but some are from actually from the Arabic. So the Samaritans today use all these hermeneutical techniques from the three epochs, and they teach their congregation and their children according to these hermeneutical rules. Thank you very much for your attention. And just to make a self advertising, there is the most recent edition of the Samaritan Pentateuch. The Genesis and Leviticus are already out of the publisher house. This is Genesis. This was published in the end of last year. Thank you very much.